Immersive cultural enrichment on board and on shore. Freshly prepared regional cuisine. Viking sails the rivers of the world and takes travelers to the heart of iconic destinations. Discover more at Viking.com.
Learn how to plan, invest, and live smarter with the Raymond James For What It's Worth podcast. Featuring insights from leading professionals, you'll get the latest in wealth management, market commentary, and engaging research. Listen today at RaymondJames.com/podcast.
I'm Jace Lacob, and you're listening to Masterpiece Studio. Charlotte Haywood is not the can-do adventurer we knew previously. She's fallen in and out of love, and she's still looking for purpose. But the Haywood family has reserves of romance, and Charlotte's younger sister, Allison, is more than ready for love.
Are these gardens not magnificent?
Not as magnificent as the company which adorns them. But you do not have a drink. You must remedy that at once.
He's always so attentive.
Allison is on the hunt for a husband, and she seems to have found one in the devastatingly handsome Captain William Carter.
I know my William, and I know that he's not a liar. You and Captain Fraser are just jealous of what we have. I'm not going to let two bitter, loveless cynics spoil my happiness.
Allison, you cannot
Three loveless cynics.
Granted, this is Sanditon. True love is never as obvious as it might initially appear, and Allison has much to consider after a disastrous proposal on a lake.
My dear Allison, there is a question I am burning to ask you. Indeed, the rest of my life may depend upon your answer.
And ask it.
Much like her character, Rosie Graham brings light and enthusiasm to the Sanditon set, and she does the same with us here on the podcast. And this week we are joined by Sanditon star Rosie Graham. Welcome.
Hello, thanks so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. I want to start by talking about Allison, of course. There is a youthful innocence, some might even say naivete, to Allison Haywood. What did you initially make of the character when you first read the scripts for Sanditon?
I thought she was great fun. I think I really admire her optimism, bags full of it. And she's so spirited and passionate, which I think are great traits. She really is a go-getter and has this energy, which I think is really nice. And I think a really nice contrast to Charlotte in season two. You sort of see how much Charlotte has grown and changed by bringing them together. Allison, I think, has some of that sort of naivety and youthful innocence that Charlotte brought to Sanditon with her in the first season. So I think it's really nice to see the sort of similarities they have, but also the contrast as well between the sisters. But yeah, I thought it was great. I thought it was just so much fun.
I do want to delve into that sort of difference. Allison and Charlotte might be from the same family. They grew up on the same farm. But as you say, they're very different characters. Allison in particular seems very taken by a romantic spirit. I'm using that with a capital R in the sense of romantic. Yeah. That Charlotte has left behind this season. What does Allison make of her older sister and the changes that she sees in her when season two begins?
I think, you know, it's interesting because sort of thinking about Austen's heroines and women in particular and sisters, sort of the role that Charlotte has to take on as the eldest daughter is quite a lot of pressure, you know. She's sort of like head of her sisters and the idol for them. And while Charlotte has spent time in Sanditon, Allison's been at home and had to sort of take over that role and those duties, but while also receiving, you know, letters, hearing all about Charlotte's time. So I think in that time, Allison has really just been raring to go and get her opportunity to experience all of the things that her sister has. I think she sort of is really excited and empowered by Charlotte's journey, but also mildly jealous and sort of raring to just sort of do it herself.
Like Charlotte, Allison is a farmer's daughter. Her prospects might be limited in that respect unless she can snag a husband with a fortune while she's visiting the seaside town of Sanditon. Is that a big part of the appeal for Allison of accompanying Charlotte on this return visit?
Well, definitely. I think, you know, according to all of the romance novels and poetry that Allison reads, that's the absolute like way to find happiness in marriage. And I don't think she sees it as a duty in the same way that Charlotte does. It is, and I think there is the pressure of them marrying and being able to support her family back home in Willingdon. And we know that the harvest hasn't been great and there is a bit of worry about their parents back on the farm. But Alison is like a romantic idealist. And I think, yeah, according to that, that is the way to achieve ultimate happiness. You know, I think she really believes the books she reads and doesn't see why she can't find that on her own.
I mean, it's interesting that you say that. She does remind me a bit of Catherine Morland from Jane Austen's Northanger Abbey, in that her worldview is shaped almost entirely by the novels that she reads, or the romantic novels that she reads. And she seems to almost believe herself that she's in a romance novel plot at this point, and so therefore acts accordingly. Yeah. Do you see that as sort of comprising her behavior here?
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. I like sort of had Catherine as well as a point of reference, and they're just how they're so adventurous and seek adventure, even when, you know, possibly putting themselves in danger. I think, you know, Charlotte is much more cautious and thinks about what she's doing. Sometimes Alison just throws caution to the wind and decides to go for it and not think about consequence. I think definitely she sees herself and hopes her time in Sanditon will play out just like a romance novel. And I think in some ways it does, you know. I think because of that, she builds herself up a bit and feels this sort of pressure to keep up appearances and what she thinks will make her you know, succeed in society. You know, she wants new clothes and she wants to dress like all of the women she sees, and she wants to attend all of the balls and meet as many men as possible. But then, you know, we figure out that actually in the course of the season, maybe that's not what she wants and not what's best for her. I think actually it's Fraser that sees the real her straight away and sort of makes her realise that just being herself is enough, and this sort of dream of romanticism and the society she dreamt of maybe isn't actually what she wants.
In many ways, Charlotte Heywood was the audience's point of view character in season one of Sanditon, but in some ways that role gets taken over in season two by Alison. Mm-hmm. What does Alison make of Sanditon as a place and as an idea?
I think she thinks it's just the height of sophistication, total glitz, total glamour. I mean, even, and it sort of is, like, I think just you see how much it's come on from season one, and it is the place to be. I think there's a really good introduction to it in episode one with Tom Parker showing the sisters around.
As you can see, my dears, Sanditon is fast becoming the most desirable destination on the South Coast.
And now I am Tom's right hand. I've been planning some schemes of my own, a pagoda and even a theatre.
Obviously, we know it's not all that appears, and there's lots of issues there that Tom Parker gets himself into. But I think, such a contrast to Willingdon as well. I think she's delighted and enthralled by all of it, but I think it does intimidate her, and a lot of it, she wants to keep up appearances and she wants it to be the best summer ever and she wants to get the husband. really just sort of is like, it will happen no matter what. This is my one chance.
A lot of your scenes, especially at first, were with Rose Williams.
Yeah.
So I'm curious what Rose is like as a scene partner and how much the two of you worked together ahead of time to sort of craft that sibling camaraderie between Alison and Charlotte.
Rose is an angel, a real life angel, and she was just fantastic. There actually wasn't all that much time before we started. I had just finished another job and was going straight into Sanditon. Sort of as soon as I came back, I was filming a film in Belfast, and as soon as I came back from that, it was the read-through. But just before that, we had a really great Zoom call with Charles Sturridge, our director for episodes 1 to 3, and Rose and myself, and that was great because we really just got into like what we thought the sister bond should be, like what they're like together, and sort of discussed personally like our relationships. I don't have a big sister, Rose has a younger sister, but I think then as soon as we started, the bond sort of just, it just, we just sort of fell into those roles. Rose is slightly older than me and is a lot more experienced, just as an actress, and she sort of just did take me under her wing and looked after me and was just like a big sister to me. We started with so many of her sister scenes, and I think that sort of, we were thrown into the deep end, but because Rose is so open and warm and generous, I really did feel comfortable with her. And then as it went on and we continued, I would just be so excited to do any of the sister scenes, and we would just, it felt so natural. It felt like we were just getting closer and closer and closer every time we were working together. And then by the end, you know, we just wouldn't even be thinking. It would be, you know, the cameras wouldn't be on us, but we'd be taking each other's hands and whispering to each other and like checking in on each other. So we were so lucky with how that all worked out. I think I love Rose. I think she's great.
So two roses intertwined.
Yeah, very confusing. Rose and Rosie. We called each other a bunch of roses.
Before this next question, a brief word from our sponsors.
All Veranda staterooms. Every day, a new view. Viking, offering a small ship experience on the world's oceans and a shore excursion in every port. Viking, exploring the world in comfort. Learn more at viking.com. Coming up next on Masterpiece on PBS, Mr. Bates versus the Post Office continues Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, followed by the finale of Alice and Jack at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central. I want to go back to episode one. There is such a sense of excitement to Allison the first time she sees the sea out of the window of the Parker's carriage. For a lot of us, that might not seem like much, but what does this vision represent to Allison? Is it as though the entire world has suddenly expanded or opened up to her in this moment?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, they have a fairly humble upbringing and a big family and raised on a farm, and they all, you know, I really love, like, you don't see so much, but just the snippets we see of Wellington in season one. And it's sort of like everyone piles in and everyone they're all very much involved in all of the farm life. And I think because of the books Alison reads, she sees this bigger world, and she sees that these stories she gets swept up in, I think, like, you know, we sort of said, she wants herself in those narratives. And I think this is her chance. And it's like nothing she's seen before. So everything is new and everything is exciting. And she's meeting people she's never met before. I think it's funny, the scene where I first meet Lady Denham. And I don't really say much. And I think Allison would just be so intimidated and be like, I sort of be like, Lady Denham is goals. I want to be her. What? How do I feel cool and calm and collect in front of her? I think she's just sort of enthralled by all of it and inspired by everyone she meets. But also, I love that, you know, she really does make the most of everything. Like, you know, just in episode one, it's like she wants to see everything at once, and like it moves quite quickly for her. You know, she wants to get the ball rolling.
I want to jump back quickly to talk about Allison and Georgiana Lamb. Mm-hmm. The two of them become friends very quickly, despite the fact that they come from very different economic backgrounds. And I'm just curious about how Allison sees Georgiana, given Allison's expectations about becoming a sort of lady of leisure in the future. Mm-hmm. What does she make of this heiress whose life is so different to her own?
I think she probably sees her as this girl boss. I think maybe they bond as well because Georgiana is spirited and sassy, and they both are mischievous as well. And they, I think, bring out, like, Georgiana really brings that out in Allison, how adventurous she is, and they sort of get up to mischief together. So I think, you know, Charlotte is trying to, you know, keep everyone on good terms and look after her, but as being a bit of a protective older sister, where Georgiana gives her the opportunity to sort of like be a bit naughty, and Allison really likes that about her. I think she also would just love hanging around with such a stylish, like, beautiful, powerful young woman. I think she's probably quite in awe of Georgiana.
I mean, let's dive into a little bit about Allison and Carter and Fraser. I mean, if it is love between Allison and Carter, it's something else altogether between Allison and the scarred, rather gruff Captain Fraser at first. Mm. I mean, if Allison and Carter are all sunshine and puppies, what are Allison and Fraser? How does she see this standoffish young man with his deadpan humor and his seemingly stoic nature?
Yeah, I think because Fraser treats her differently than every other man sort of treats her. And she's almost a bit like disarmed by him. And she doesn't like that he's not falling at her feet or you know, desperate to woo her. I think because of that, because maybe he treats her and more similarly to the lads she would have grew up with in Willingdon, she just takes a bit of a disliking. And she's like, oh, you're a bit rude and you're a bit curt and you're standoffish. And I don't need to try with you because you're not trying with me. And she sort of like jumps on the fence of... But what I really like about their relationship is there's sort of this battle of wits, you know, and she gives as much as she gets from him. And, you know, it becomes more and more affectionate how they sort of slag one another off. And that's something she never has with Carter. You know, she dreams of this ideal romantic scenario. And it sort of happens. It's presented to her. She wakes up. Carter saves her heroically. And she decides, okay, this will be my love story. It's love at first sight. And then she sort of is blind to everything else because I think she's so desperate for the happy ending. So it's just like surface, surface, surface. Also, you know, we know that she is wooed under false pretenses. And Carter's giving her what she thinks she wants, which is just... love poems and compliments and flowers, when, you know, we discover that actually she needs more than that and wants and doesn't want that. And that's not what will give her the happy ending. I think, you know, Fraser sees the real her straight away and she hasn't even really seen herself because I think she's falls victim to feeling like she really needs to keep up pretenses and be a certain way and be a certain type of woman to survive Sanditon and succeed in the town. But then it's when she sort of like lets her guard down and realizes that she can be herself.
There is someone. I knew it. What is her name?
I cannot say.
Then tell me, what is she like?
Oh, she is a rare creature indeed. Delicate, yet strong. Guileless, yet wise. But in truth, I am quite undone in her company.
Does she know of your feelings?
No, no, no. No good could come of that, Miss Heywood. Her heart belongs elsewhere. Besides, I know she could never look on me with tenderness.
I want to talk about the scene where it does shift, which to me is sort of the scene where Allison and Fraser are caught in the rain together.
We are soaking wet.
How observant you are, Miss Heywood. It is a rare gift.
If only wars were won on wit alone, Captain Fraser. May I ask who you are gathering flowers for?
If you must know, they are for Colonel Lennox.
And I'm sure he will be quite swept off his feet. Tell my brave Captain Carter I will write to him.
Aye. He will be glad to hear it.
And Allison realizes she doesn't know whom he was actually gathering flowers for. How do you play the Beatrice Benedict aspect of the scene with Fraser and that fine line between repartee and subtext? And what was it like filming this particular scene with Frank Blake?
Oh, it was really fun. It was a really, really beautiful location. And I remember we were both just like, wow, like this is a fantastic, like it looked beautiful. So I think we were actually both sort of swept up in the like glamour and romanticism of the scene. I was very excited for a bit of rain machine action. I think that's very fun. I love it and I'm a sucker for it. And also Frank, I think it's really cool. He wasn't supposed to ride in on horseback, but he Frank Blake grew up on an equestrian center, so it knows his way around the horses. He's like an excellent horse rider. And Charles was like, well, let's make use of that. And then he, in a really cool way, rides in, jumps off the horse, is picking flowers, which rounds his character even more out as like cool, talented, you know. But I really enjoyed this scene because I think it's important that they're both intelligent and they are both well-read, and this, without them trying to prove that to each other, just shows it. You know, it's not like Carter trying to impress with the poetry. They both just do get on and are on the same page, and like can give as good as they get with one another. So I think that's a great scene. But I think it's quite heartbreaking because I think you sort of see how Fraser is feeling towards Alison at that point, but still the scene ends with him, send my love to my brave Carter or something like that, and you're once again reminded of the sort of sorry position that Fraser is in. I think that, yeah, that's a great scene.
All of that sort of bubbles to the surface at Lady Denham's garden party in episode 4. Fraser throws Allison's description of him back at her, the Spartan, coarse, unrefined soldier that he is, leading her to declare that there must be a beating heart beneath that uniform. And he admits that he's in love, and he then describes her so beautifully, but says that her heart belongs elsewhere. Does Allison truly not realize that he's talking about her here?
I really don't think she does, because I think he describes her in such a beautiful way that Allison, and with words that Allison doesn't even see in herself yet. I think, you know, she is confident and spirited and energetic and optimistic. But I think she, in the discovery of her love, really is discovering herself as well. So I think, like, she can't possibly fathom someone describing her so beautifully and articulately, which makes it all the more, like, lovely and emotional when, you know, we find out that those words were about her, and that she found, yeah, that he was talking about her. I think, you know, she, in that moment, she really thinks, wow, this is a really nice man. Who wouldn't want his love? Anyone would be lucky to have Captain Fraser. But just still, it's that last bit of this blindness to the fact that, oh my god, she could have Captain Fraser. Those words are her words, you know. Again, I think episode 4 is my favourite. I think it's such a dramatic episode. It's so juicy.
And then things go horribly, horribly wrong. Carter takes out a boat and he proposes to Allison, who happily accepts. And this seems like the perfect fairy tale moment, the culmination of all of Allison's dreams, predicated on all of those romance novels that she's read and devoured all these years. Until she falls out of the boat and Carter almost lets her drown because he can't swim. What goes through Allison's mind in this moment that she's drowning?
God, I think it just total horror and disbelief, because she, you know, she really, why would she not believe everything that Carter had said? This is her first sort of, I imagine, romantic involvement with anyone. And she's basing it all on the books that she's read. And in those, there's the happy ever after, and there's the perfect endings. So she believes that this man has saved 50 men at Bidasoa, swimming and fought in battle, and is as brave and heroic as all of the heroes she reads about. So now that, when the time comes for her to be saved, he's absolutely useless. It's just heartbreaking. And I think, yeah, the moment, the sort of scene that follows after, when it all becomes clear, when it's Fraser who has the wet shirt and Carter didn't jump off the boat to save her, it was Fraser that had to save her. He couldn't even swim. That must mean that every single thing has been a lie. Just at the moment she thought her dream was coming true and it was all going to work out for her. So it's a huge, huge moment for Allison. And just, yeah, heartbreaking, because it's like everything that she threw herself into, and she was so open and honest and passionate about, and, you know, it was all on false pretenses and it was all based on lies.
I love that scene, as you say, that Carter is still in the boat we get this great moment with Fraser and Allison on the shore. And then there's Carter kind of in this little tiny boat, and he doesn't know what to do, this supposed savior of 50 men from drowning. You see it on your face that this is where the truth clicks for Allison about Carter. And it's sort of her, oh, I've made a huge mistake moment.
You cannot swim. You would have let me drown.
No. When Captain Fraser arrived, I was just about to die.
Stop! No more lies! Charlotte was right. You were never out, but sir, were you? Was he?
It's not my place to say.
Was any of it true?
My feelings for you are true.
You are nothing but a coward. And I'm nothing but a fool. And you knew, and you said nothing.
With whom do you think she's most angry in this moment? Carter, Fraser, or herself?
Good question. I think a big part is humiliation. She's totally humiliated. As I sort of said, it's not like she's been hiding this great love she thought she had for Carter. It's been made very clear, very apparent, and everyone will know that it's all been a massive failure, and she's let herself fall into this trap. I mean, even, you know, the scenes before when Charlotte warns her, I don't think Carter's the man he said he is. And the way she was then lashed out and rude to her sister because she was so desperate for her love story to be true. So I think it's a huge part of being so disappointed in herself. I think humiliated and hurt by Carter. But I think the hurt towards Fraser is that by this point, she feels like they are good friends and they're connected. And, you know, he's a bit of an ally and someone that she's been able to confide in. In Sanditon, and she really valued that. But yeah, I think a big part of just humiliation and being so disappointed in herself and ashamed of what's happened, it feels like it's been a resounding failure, you know?
And yet, we'll see. So much of Allison's storyline is based around her fondness for poetry. It's where she gets a lot of her romantic notions. It's how Carter is able to win her over, even though he's borrowing Fraser's poetic knowledge and feelings. And I'm curious, are you a fan of poetry? Did you turn to the romantics in an effort to feel at home in the role of Allison Heywood?
Yeah, I definitely am. And yeah, I'd actually recently seen the play Cyrano de Bergerac, but which I think, you know, is definitely inspiration that's been drawn from that, and the story of the poet. So, and I adored it. I saw a production of the play in Glasgow, where I'm from, and it was written in Scots. And then I also saw James McAvoy play Cyrano de Bergerac in London. So I was really familiar with that story. And yeah, how heartbreaking it was. But also in terms of poetry, yeah, I think I've always been a fan of poetry. Definitely sort of Scots poetry as well. I've always been a fan of
A bit of Robbie Burns, yeah. Of course.
Our poet laureate of Scotland. We did this thing in my primary school every year. We had the Burns competition, and you used to have to learn a Scots poem and perform it to your class, and then they'd vote for a winner. And I entered it every single year, and I was fiercely competitive. I won it quite a few years, and that was like my whole year was working towards the Burns poetry. And I still celebrate Burns Day every year. So I definitely, yeah, love poetry. And
can you give us a taste of some Robbie Burns then, off the top of your head?
There, you know, the song, what's a line? My love is like a red, red rose that's newly sprung in June. My love is like a melody that's sweetly played in tune. I'll mess up the rest of the lines. There's also a funny one that's for Grace. I remember this because at my granny's house in the Highlands, it's written on her sort of table mats. And it's a way to say grace before you eat your meal. And it's Burns. And it's just, some hae meat and can eat, and some would eat that want it. But we hae meat and we can eat, so say the Lord we thank it.
Looking ahead and without spoiling, what can you tease about what's coming up for Allison in these final two episodes? Where's her story going in the broadest sense?
In the next two episodes, I think we really see Allison come into her own and quite a lot of self-discovery. You know, she's been on the journey of it, but I think she really sort of finds out where her heart lies what makes her happy and like who she is as a young woman. But also, hopefully you'll see a good bit of joy.
Fingers crossed. This isn't your first brush with a show with a rather passionate and engaged audience. You sort of obliquely referred earlier to your role on Outlander, where you played poor Morna Cameron.
Yeah.
And Outlander has a similarly devoted audience to Sanditon. What was it like playing Morna on Outlander, and what do you make of passionate fandoms?
It was amazing. Outlander was my first professional job. I was 19, and everything about it was so exciting. I sort of, again, you know, Outlander's filmed in Scotland, just outside the city I grew up in, and I think Scotland in general is quite naive to how huge the show is. So it really wasn't until it came out, and I mean, actually, all of my scenes were sort of cut. Like, I'm only in a tiny, tiny bit. I did a few scenes with some, like, all of my lines were cut. So I like was sitting down to watch it, and I was like, oh, I thought there was more. But although I was only in it briefly, which was, you know, fantastic, and everyone on all of the crew and the cast there are the greatest people, and costumes are so cool. I think it's a great show. But until it came out, and you know, I was in it just a snippet, and I had all these people like tweeting me and saying Morna, and I was like, oh my goodness, it was like, that was definitely my first taste of anything like that, and I couldn't believe it. And everyone was so friendly and so passionate, and it was amazing to see it, and made me feel so included, even though it was just, you know, this tiny wee sort of guest role. And it is incredible. Like, I love just how much of a community it is, and God, like, power to the people. It's amazing, and everyone is so friendly, so kind, you know, really make you feel so welcome. People like tweeting you happy birthday, and I'm like, you guys don't even know me yet, you haven't seen it. But you couldn't wish for sort of better fans of a show. It feels very lucky that they're already there supporting it before it's even come out, you know. So I just hope that they're pleased with what we've done, you know. I hope they're happy with it all, because they deserve it, you know.
Rosie Graham, thank you so very much.
Well, thanks so much for having me. So nice to talk to you.
While Charlotte Haywood may be stuck in neutral, her best friend Georgiana Lamb is moving full speed ahead with an unexpected new romance.
The very person. We're due at Mr. Lockhart's studio, but poor Miss Hankins has rushed off her feet. I don't suppose you would mind chaperoning me?
Alas, I have an important meeting in an hour.
That would be time enough. I know Mr. Lockhart would be delighted to see you.
Well, I suppose I could spare a little time.
Crystal Clark returns to the podcast April 17th. Masterpiece Studio is hosted by me, Jace Lacob, and produced by Nick Anderson. Elishaba Etoup is our editor. The executive producer of Masterpiece is Suzanne Simpson. Sponsors for Masterpiece on PBS are Viking Cruises, Raymond James, and the Masterpiece Trust.